Welcome back to Digesting Dark, where we are tackling the Netflix series Dark one episode at a time. For this episode, we rewatched the season one finale titled Alpha and Omega, and we are going to talk about it as it relates to the series as a whole as we lead up to the premiere of season number three, the final season of Dark, just 2 weeks and one day from now. Can you believe it? 2 weeks and one day.
Which would be 15, which is 3-3-3-3-3.
Yes, 5 threes.
Yes.
So, as always, I am joined by the Bartos to my Noah, Aaron Brooks. I am Zach Brooks. Aaron Brooks, how are you?
I'm good, Zach Brooks. How are you?
Good. Just want to make sure people weren't confused what Dark podcast they were listening to. This is Digesting Dark. This is not a, you know, Dissecting Dark or Discovering Dark or Disillusioning Dark. No other words. Just Digesting Dark.
Unofficial.
We've done it. We've made it to the end of season one. Hooray.
Yes. Yep. I feel like we're right back where we started.
Yeah, the beginning is the end and the end is the beginning. We are in the shadows now. So we're going to talk about everything that happened in this episode. Of course, this podcast is suitable for people who have seen all of season one and season two, because we're going to spoil things that happen in season two. And then in 2 weeks and one day, 15 days from now, when season three premieres, we will start talking about those season three episodes one at a time. And those will be completely unspoiled because we won't have seen anything. So that will just be our live reactions as we are getting new information from the Dark Universe.
Yes, those should be very interesting.
Yes.
I have no idea what to expect.
We don't even know how many episodes there is. We think eight, but I don't think we even know. I'm sure that information is readily available, but we're not going to talk about that. So season one, though, had 10 episodes, and this is the 10th and final episode. It is called Alpha and Omega, of course. Alpha is the first letter of the Greek alphabet. Omega is the last letter of the Greek alphabet. In this episode, we get a lot of talk about ends and beginnings and the loops being started or completed, however you want to look at them. And we do get a little bit of every time period, including 2052? Is that where Jonas is at the end of this episode?
Yep. Our fourth timeline.
Yes, our fourth time. So we are moving away from three. We are moving into four. We're going to be releasing a podcast quite frequently over the next couple weeks. So if you've not yet subscribed, make sure you subscribe to Digesting Dark on all podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify. We are listed on anchor.fm if you want to listen on a web browser as well. I've also started putting all of our episodes on YouTube. So if you're the kind of person who likes to listen to podcasts on YouTube, you can also look up Digesting Dark on there. And we've started getting some interaction on that. Before we get started, actually, we do have some feedback from somebody on YouTube. We got a comment on there.
Nice.
Yes. So Hillary on YouTube said she just finished rewatching for the second time. I'm not sure if she meant the whole season or just the premiere, but in preparation for the third season, and she had been listening along with us. She said, listening to the season one, episode, we talk about yellow and threes. Spoiler alert, Hillary, we talk about yellow and threes in almost every episode. But she said, maybe you've brought this up, but in the colors of the rainbow, yellow is the third color.
I forgot that from my Magic School Bus episode on the color spectrum.
I was thinking about like the song from nursery school that I learned that was all of the colors of the rainbow. Of course, that went the other way. That started with violet. This way, if you start, so Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. And that is a really interesting way to think about colors in this show. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that's a great comment. Yeah. And not something I would have ever looked at otherwise. So.
Nope.
Great point.
And if you think about it too, so green, we've got Mikkel in green. We also see the Stranger in green. I think we see other characters. We see Egon in green as well.
Yep, we see Mikkel disappear in red.
Yep, Mikkel disappears in red. We see orange. We see Agnes in red. So we see all of these colors through green. We don't see much blue, indigo, or violet that I can think of, unless you're talking about eyes.
Right.
So. We'll have to pay attention for violet. I mean, maybe if, you know, red is one end of the spectrum, violet is the other end of the spectrum, and then they can...
I could see there being a character named Violet.
Yeah.
That,
that is kind of
like
surprising we haven't had a character named Violet.
Violet.
Yes. Maybe that will be, I don't know, somebody's name in this. Some Katarina's mother's name is Violet, maybe. Her abusive mother. Yeah. So, all right, let's get into this episode. I think we're just going to tackle this one just chronologically as we see it on screen. We do jump timelines, but it's, you know, for the most part, this is told pretty linearly, sequentially. Mm-hmm. So
sounds good.
We start, though, we have a little bit of a flashback. We start to the day of Mikkel's disappearance, and we are finally getting the answer to what Peter was doing when Mikkel disappeared, sort of. So he's sitting in his car outside of Bernadette's trailer. Bernadette has the yellow umbrella out. Then he leaves. He looks upset. And he goes to the bunker, and when he's in the bunker, he's saying the serenity prayer. So, you know, give me the serenity to change the things to accept things I cannot change. And, I don't remember. Do you remember the rest of it?
Give me the power to change the things I can. Basically, it's allowing the things to happen that cannot. I don't remember the exact
serenity. I know it if I wasn't on the spot. Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Power to know the difference. Something everybody can look it up. So let's we understand what the serenity prayer.
Yeah, so he's accepting the things he cannot change and all of that. and then suddenly, right after I think he slaps himself at one point too. I wasn't sure if somebody else slapped him, but then I realized it must have just been him slapping himself.
Yeah, there's a lot of slaps in this season.
Ooh, interesting.
I wish I would have kind of kept track of every time there was a slap.
Next season.
That is definitely the first self-slap.
Yeah.
Selfie.
I have something that – yes, selfie. I have something that that I picked up that when we get to it is something I wish I was tracking for all season one. I might have to go back through and restart season one. As he finishes the serenity prayer, a time portal opens in the bunker in front of him, and out pops Mads with his school ID around his neck and his eyes burnt out. Peter calls Tronte.
Tries giving him CPR at first.
Did he try to give him? I didn't even know that. Okay, he tries to give him CPR, then he calls Tronte. And Tronte comes in, and it was interesting. I guess I didn't even think about this, the fact that that they find Mads, obviously, and Mads is Tronte's son. I, did not even really think about that at all when I was thinking about their work together.
Yeah, and 33 years later to see his son.
Yep, 33 years later, his son looks exactly the same. And then all of a sudden, Claudia walks in, and she tells them that we need to take Mads to where he will be found. Of course, this is what sets off a big chain of events in this season. And that is our cold open. So we still don't really know what – and maybe we get in the second season. We don't really know what Peter was so upset about. Was it just that he was going to Bernadette's to try to cheat on Charlotte? He was drawn to Bernadette again?
I'm not sure. I think maybe they had to continue participating in this thing they didn't want to participate in, maybe.
But I don't think he was even involved. I think he didn't get involved in this until the body arrives in the bunker.
Yeah, but he was told to go to the bunker by somebody.
That's true. And he knew to call Tronte, so he knew Tronte already.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll find
out. He was more upset than Tronte.
Yeah, that's true. And I just felt like I get that we're getting like a puzzle piece here and we're finding out that Tronte and Peter work together, but it just feels like this was like, I don't know. It just didn't fit with the way that they have a lot of other reveals in this show. This scene just kind of felt like it was like stuck on there and be like, all right, here's like a something we need to answer before the season's over. It's like, here's your answer. But
yeah, I don't know. Claudia's a little bit out there in general. So
that's true.
Her stuff is a little bit strange, but mm-hmm. She's walking around in one of the earlier episodes with like a huge gun.
Yeah, like, and in this episode as well, she has.
And it really sticks out. Like, she's the only person who's like that. I mean, we see it more in the future in season two a little bit more, I guess. But still, like her hair, just like everything about her, is really a little more out there and different than anybody else in the show.
Oh well, if you think her hair is out there, have you met my friend Ulrich? Because he's going to get some hair just like Claudia.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So then we get the intro and we flash forward to November 12th. Jonas once again wakes up to start this episode with a nightmare. This time not about Mikkel. He has a nightmare about Mikkel. So we've seen lots of characters wake up to nightmares. We saw Helge wake up to a nightmare. And the nightmare that Helge sees actually is what we'll see towards the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see Martha and Bartos. They look like they're finally having, I don't know, to break up or reconciliation.
Well, when Jonas wakes up, we see him look at his pills and put two pills into his hand and throw them back into the pill bottle and throw the pills out.
Oh, interesting. Yep. Must have been taking notes at that point because I didn't even notice that.
So, clue that he could just be crazy.
Could just be crazy or accepting, accepting the...
Well, he's now not on medication, whatever medication he was supposed to be on.
Yep. With Bartos and Martha, I didn't think there was much in this scene between them except the line, everything is okay. So the last episode was called Everything Is Now.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed in that episode how much the word everything came up. And I noticed the word everything came up a lot in this episode as well. Both words everything and nothing are said quite a bit in this episode. So that's something I would like to go back and I'm not going to, but if I was going to rewatch season one and if anybody else wants to rewatch season one again after going through all of this, track how many times people say everything.
Well, I mean, everything is okay is exactly what Regina asked for Alexander to say to her when she woke up from her nightmare.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So yeah. I just feel like the
it's a key, it's like that exact phrase. She said, tell me everything is okay.
Hmm.
And then he says it when everything isn't okay, just like Bartos says to Martha when everything isn't okay.
Right, exactly.
Also, Martha in this scene says since Mikkel's disappeared, she doesn't recognize herself.
Mm.
Little clues on identity of Martha or who she isn't, maybe.
Right, and we still don't really know because we know there's going to be an alternate mm-hmm. universe version of Martha.
Yep.
Then we move to Charlotte. She is going to Helge's room at the nursing home. Helge is missing. They talk about how Helge has run away before. She mentions that her partner Ulrich had been there, but they said Ulrich was not there since the day that Helge and Ulrich had their big like physical altercation.
Mm-hmm.
So of course we know Ulrich was there. But he was there after Helge had already left a couple episodes ago. So
yep.
He must have just confirming that he just snuck in. Then we flash back. I love the sound that they use to let you know you're flashing to a different time period.
Didn't they show Helge waking up in the treehouse?
Yes, but that's in the 80s.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, so Helge wakes up in the treehouse, the same spot that we saw Jonas wake up when he was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I got very excited when I saw that treehouse. I was like, oh, we're going to get more about the treehouse. No, not really. Just that Helge was sleeping there. Curious,
yeah, I guess,
if we see the treehouse at all in the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're in the 80s now, 1986. Enis and Jonas. Oh, wait, no, then we come back. Sorry, then we come back to 2019. Enis and Jonas are having a discussion. There is discussion between Enis and Nicole later in the episode. Enis and Jonas have a discussion in 2019. And Jonas is asking her about Mikkel being Michael and asks if she knew. Jonas seems to have trouble understanding the concept that the letter that he burnt is not is the later version of the letter that Enis had. It doesn't even mm-hmm. look the same. The letter that he had is way dirtier and older, and Enis has a letter, which he ends up taking. This was a scene I had to watch a couple times. It felt like there was a lot in this conversation.
Yeah, Jonas was in black in this scene.
Oh, I did not notice. I usually pick up on that. I didn't notice that. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Jonas asks Enis if she knew about Mikkel, and she says that she thinks she always knew. At first, she kind of denied it and thought he was just a strange kid.
And he asked in kind of an interesting way. He asked if she knew the boy from the future.
Oh, he did. Okay. Yeah.
And so that's the same way that obviously Mikkel introduces himself.
Yep. In his comic book as well.
Yep.
Yeah, she said she thought he might have been disturbed or even had like an overactive imagination, I think is what she said. But, you know, they start talking about like, did you know he was going to take his own life? And, Enis says no. Of course, Jonas is still, he's like trying to really lay out here the connections. And I guess he's just processing it. But he's talking about, I have another grandma now. I have an aunt. Mm-hmm. I guess it's easier for us because we know what time travel is in this show. But for us, it's like, yeah, Jonas, we know. That's how it works. Like,
well, he also supports my theory when he says he's the wrong one. He says everybody else is not.
Yeah, he says, "I'm what's wrong," was his phrase. Mm-hmm. Yep, mm-hmm. And I wrote that down too because I was thinking about your theory that he is the thing that needs to be cut out.
Yep.
So,
and his whole life is just kind of battling with that realization and trying to find ways to change it and realizing he can't change it. And that's kind of his prison he's in.
Mm-hmm. And Enos is telling him basically to accept his fate and that, you know, everything happens for a reason and who are we to play God? So, but Jonas, you know, just wants everything to go back to normal, whatever normal is. I guess normal is his, the way he was before Michael killed himself, basically.
Yep.
So, and I guess, you know, if that's like his idealized version of life, we do get to see that day, the day before Michael kills himself, and see the idealized version of Jonas's life.
I mean, it would go with the themes of the show that say that there is no truth. There's just the stories that we like and that we tell ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And the story he likes and tells himself involves things being in a certain set way.
And, you know, there is a, you know, there's people talk about nostalgia a lot that like you always have this nostalgia and your memories are like a version of what happened, a story you're telling yourself what happened, but it's not the objective truth of what happened. So I think one thing that will be interesting to watch is, I can't remember if it's episode 3 or episode 4, when we get the day before Michael killed himself episode, is Jonas really that happy during that episode? Like, are things as normal and great as he's telling himself they were? Or when we see it from like a, you know, an objective point of view, did he have just as many problems back then? It just didn't involve kind of all these loops in time travel that he knew about.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know how crazy he is. He doesn't know how crazy he is.
Right. Because even before Michael killed himself, his parents still had all kinds of problems. Hannah, I think, was already cheating on Michael. Mm-hmm. You know, like he didn't have this like great life and then Michael killed himself and everything was wrong.
Yeah, and also, yeah, there was do we ever find out what Michael's illness was?
I don't think Michael has an illness. I think Michael.
Well, Jonas says before Michael got sick, Jonas was talking about Hannah.
Say that he had like mental illness to justify him killing himself. But
okay.
I don't think he's actually sick. I think what we see is and we're going to find out in just a couple days what this is, but I think that what we see with Michael is that he kills himself because that's what always happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the loop he has to fulfill is by killing himself.
Right.
Although it could just be his illness, could be that he's in, you know, that he is living in 2019 at two different times. Like there's an old version of him and he has to avoid the child version of him. And they go to a party for Ulrich and Katarina, for example. And I don't think he goes. And it's like, yeah, Michael probably has to try to avoid that family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they might say he's sick, but it might just be that he's off because he sees his parents and he's like the same age as his parents essentially now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, that would probably mess with your head.
Right. So, yeah. I don't know.
I'm really excited to get to that episode. I think that episode, revisiting that, will give us a lot of keys to this show. So
maybe.
yeah, maybe. We'll see. So then we go back to the 80s. We have Mikkel and Enos talking. So we kind of mirror this Enos and Jonas conversation. Mikkel once again does his magic trick that we saw in the premiere.
No, this is a different one, though.
Is it? I thought it was essentially the same thing.
It seemed like a little bit different because his magic trick in the premiere has the yellow figure going from one cup to the other cup without
moving. Right. This time he's doing sugar cubes.
Yeah, and there ends up being one under each cup.
Right.
I don't think he ever duplicated the figures in the first one.
Well, we never saw how he did it in the first one. So I think what this is showing us is this is how he actually did it. There were two yellow pieces. Mm-hmm. Which goes with the duality and twin stuff that we've talked about in this show. And this time he's actually showing us that he did it by having two sugar cubes. I still don't quite understand how he did it, but that's why he's the magician. I'm not.
But, yeah, maybe we get a piece of it.
Yeah. You know, maybe this is a clue, right? We're seeing things move, and what we're actually seeing is things duplicate instead of things move.
Mm-hmm. So
these loops are creating duplicates, maybe.
Yep.
And they talk about Houdini. Mikkel says that Houdini dreamt that he could be a magician. And Enos asks Mikkel if he has the same dreams as Houdini. But Mikkel says the magic that he wants to do is impossible. And I do believe we hear the word impossible later on in the episode as well. I thought this was really interesting. Enis brings up, I don't remember whose theory it was. I didn't write down, but it's some
Master Zhang's.
Master Zhang's theory. And it's about a man who wakes up from a dream and believes in the dream he was a butterfly. But when he wakes up, the theory is that he doesn't know, was he a man dreaming about being a butterfly or a butterfly dreaming about being a man?
Mm-hmm.
And Mikkel responds, maybe I'm both. So again, duality, I guess, is that. And we will have dual Michaels once we get to the 2019 timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So that was between this scene and the scene before it, I had to rewatch those so many times. It really kind of, it made me have to watch this episode for a very long time. It took like 2 hours to watch this episode.
Yeah, those are pretty big scenes.
Yep. Then we go to the 50s. And we get a little bit of Ulrich in this episode. So Ulrich is being processed in the 1950s in the 53 timeline. Egon is talking to him, and he realizes that this is Egon Tiedemann, and he's like, of course, this is Egon Tiedemann. Ulrich says to him, my only, and he even says this in English, he sings a lyric, he says, my only aim is to take many lives. The more I take, the better I feel. Egon accuses him of being a Satanist, which I believe is the same thing Egon talks about in the 80s. Egon thinks that teenage Ulrich is a Satanist.
Yeah, and that's obviously the heavy metal lyrics that are playing when he enters Ulrich's room.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yep.
Like, that's the exact part. So he hears that, and he's like, oh my God, I've heard this before.
Oh, when 80s Ulrich, or when 80s mm-hmm. Egon enters the Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting
way to close that loop. Yeah, it's the exact lyrics in the heavy metal song there. Wow. Playing.
Good memory by Ulrich to remember 33 years later.
I mean, that's a very specific thing for someone to say to you. Although it's not in your native language, I don't think I would remember it. If someone just said something like El Diablo Muerte, I would be
99
like,
Luftballons, somebody quotes that song or something.
But either way, I mean, he noticed it at the time in the 50s, too, so he must be bilingual.
Right. And it definitely catches Egon's attention. We do see his attention getting caught early on in the season. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. That is when he walks into the room, he's kind of distracted by that quote. And I do believe there's more with Egon and some of these quotes that happens in the second season.
Yeah, there definitely is.
All right, and then... Ulrich says to Egon, in the 80s, you won't like it, and asks Egon, are you already drinking, or will that start after your wife leaves you? We don't get an answer to that question, but, is Ulrich putting this idea in Egon's head?
That's kind of the central question with Egon and Ulrich overall. Who started out hating who started out being suspect or doubting who planted the seeds of doubt in whose head? That's the whole thing between those two.
Yeah, it's a like really everything. Interesting loop between them.
Meanwhile, Charlotte Tiedemann and Trante Nielsen have been sleeping together at this time.
Claudia Tiedemann.
Right.
That's in the 80s. Yeah, not, it's in the 80s, though.
In the 80s, yeah. Not
I was going to say, not in the 50s, because they're like little kids in the 50s.
Right, so, in the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so his father and Egon's daughter are connected. Yeah, so that's this is why you need a character chart, because there is that connection too. So then he yells out for his son and says that he can set everything right. He just needs to finish killing Helge or something along those lines.
Yeah, and the main torturer ends up being Ulrich's grandfather, Daniel.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, that's Daniel Kahnwald right there. He's the main torturer of Ulrich. Ulrich tells Egon he'll be an alcoholic after his wife leaves. And then at the same time this is all going on, then Bartosz runs into Jonas at the school.
Yep. Yeah, so we get Bartosz and Jonas with like the weakest bro fight ever.
But it did remind me a lot of kind of the fight between Regina and Katarina. So
oh, really?
Tiedemann's and
Nielsen.
Yeah, Nielsen's kind of a similar type of thing at the school.
I mean, it was a fight at the school in front of Martha, and she was just standing there kind of helpless.
people to fight. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't think there was anything else really in this. I mean, it's just like a fight in the rain. They're kind of pushing each other. They are talking about how he lied for him. And he said, you apparently didn't need me. You could do this all by yourself.
Yeah. Not much there.
No, not much there. I mean, the thing to remember with this is like everything that's going on, Bartosz is being told this by Noah. Mm-hmm. So how much is, and even we see later in the episode, Noah talks about pawns, but is Bartosz a pawn in a lot of this as well?
Yeah, and the way that Noah's proving his worth is just like, that's Noah's move. He does the same thing with Trante when he's like, everything he said was going to happen, happened. And then later in this episode, Bartosz says the same thing to Noah, that everything you said was going to happen, this happened.
Yep.
So that's his move.
All right, then another scene that I had to watch multiple times. We have HG and the Stranger. I noticed that the Stranger walks in. So every time he walks in, there's that grandfather clock right there. Of course, HG is a grandfather for Charlotte. And he walks in at 8:31 is what time the grandfather clock says. HG is working on both machines. He has them next to each other. I wrote down that they are twin machines. And he even points out that it's like looking at the beginning and the end at the same time because he has the brand new machine and the one that's been used a bunch. He explains how the cell phone, Ulrich's cell phone, is what is emitting an electronic pulse. And that electronic pulse, you know, obviously
doesn't know. He still doesn't know what it is. He still just refers to it as a device.
Right. A device with, I mean, obviously it's got a picture on it. It's got a clock on it, but he has no idea what it is. But the phone itself is emitting enough of a pulse that it's getting the machine to do what he's been waiting for. He said that wasn't, the phone part of it wasn't in the blueprint, but he mentions how, you know, he knows it's a device from the future. He says the future influences the past.
Yeah. And by the phone being involved, it opens up the little canister container where you put the cesium.
Yep. I also noticed he keeps the phone in drawer number 18. So 18 is also a multiple of 3. That is 6 times 3. So it's just written on the drawer. And Jonas puts the, or Stranger Jonas puts the radioactive cesium in there that with HG mentions that the same thing must have happened during the power plant incident.
Yep. Says it creates a Higgs field.
Yes, a Higgs field. That's what it was. And HG mentions that he's part of the puzzle. Yes, everybody here is part of a puzzle. So Jonas takes the machine. I was trying to figure out which machine he takes. I think he takes the newer version of the machine, so the one that hasn't been used, which would make sense because that he goes and gives that one to his younger self later on, and then that machine gets worn and used a lot. And then it becomes the older version of the machine that the Stranger eventually takes back to HG, completing that loop.
Yeah, when they're looking at both time machines, he says one is looking at the beginning and the end simultaneously.
Exactly. So I would think that is saying like the end one is done. It is put out of commission, but he puts the cesium in there to make the other one new.
Yeah, and it's a continued theme as Jonas is listening to HG talk that Jonas is convinced he can change the unchangeable.
Right.
So,
and that's when HG says that he's just a piece in the puzzle. I did notice the cell phone because there's a clock on the cell phone. The cell phone reads 8 p.m. So the grandfather clock read 8:31. The cell phone reads 8. It says 800.
Also, I believe the battery percentage was 87.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Okay.
So
nice.
Just
I could not see this. I did not see the battery percentage. I probably should have paused it.
Yeah.
So Jonas takes the original machine, I don't even know what to call it, the more shiny version of the machine, and he walks out of HG's shop, and the grandfather clock, even though it's been like a 5-minute scene, the grandfather clock still reads 8:31. So it's probably just like a fun Easter egg with that. Maybe that grandfather clock is broken, but I don't think so. And I don't think they're in like a weird time portal where nothing happens. But
yeah, I'm not sure.
I watched that scene twice. That grandfather clock does not change time when he walks in, when he walks out.
Maybe it's not working.
Yeah. I just think it's like putting a grandfather clock right there, a huge clock face right when he walks in. There's a reason for that. It's like you're meant to pay attention to that. So then we get a scene back in 2019 where Peter calls or Charlotte calls Peter and is asking about Helge, and is asking about when he was kidnapped as a child. and he mentions 1953, and she puts together for the audience that is 2 × 33. That is 66 years ago. So thank you for that. Appreciate it. And then we flash to the 80s, and Helge, the 80s Helge arrives at the cabin. His older version of himself is there, and the older version of himself talks to him and says, don't, you know, not to believe Noah. You have to stop. He's using you. You and him are not the chosen one. He says, today is the day, the beginning and the end. And old Helge says, I have to stop. And then younger Helge, the 80s version of Helge, runs away, mm-hmm. or drives away, I guess. Of course, we know later on in this episode, they will have a big car accident. But middle-aged Helge is upset. And I was thinking too, like, you know, middle-aged Helge has got, like, clearly, like, he's just slower mentally. And older Helge has dementia, but it's probably just from, like, the amount of trauma this guy has had. And especially because we see child Helge goes through the wormhole, like, just this guy has just been through so much and has been so tortured by so many different people that he's just basically like a machine at this point.
Yeah, yeah, he's completely damaged.
Yeah. Then we see Jonas in the attic, and he talks to Hannah. It is the last conversation they're going to have, I think, for a long time until the stranger comes back. I don't think Hannah sees that we see. I don't think Hannah sees young Jonas again.
Did you want to talk about anything Noah says to Helge, or is that after this?
That's after. That's the next scene after this.
Okay.
Or a couple scenes after this, actually. But this scene, the only thing I noticed about Hannah and Jonas is that Jonas says to Hannah, everything will be fine. So once again, everything being mentioned. Then we get, before we go back to the 80s, still staying in 2019, we get Trante and Peter in the bunker. And they talk about, this is what you referenced earlier, they said everything she said would happen, did happen. They're talking about Helge. And then they bring out the book as well. And Peter wants to know why half the pages have been torn out. And I don't have written down who said it, but everything will be new after today is what was said.
That was Trante.
Trante said that. Peter is skeptical. Trante seems to have more faith in Claudia, probably because of his relationship with Claudia. So, mm-hmm. Although one thing we didn't mention is in the opening scene when Trante sees Claudia, when she shows up, Trante did act like this is the first time he's seen Claudia in a very long time.
Yeah, so, he definitely looks surprised.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like that Claudia, you know, when she goes away in the 80s and starts becoming this time-traveling, you know, gray-haired woman, that I don't think she stays in her present time for very long. So her relationship with Trante probably ends very abruptly. Mm-hmm. So it's something I want to watch in the next season is what happens between them. So... then we go back to this conversation you were mentioning between Helge and Noah. This is another one that I had to watch twice. Mm-hmm. And they talk about, Noah tells the story about a man who is in his house when he was a child and was talking in his sleep when he was a boy. Talks about how nothing was in vain. And Noah talks about how nothing was in vain. He says the man looked like he'd been in a war. And as soon as they say that, it cuts to Jonas. Mm-hmm. So do we see this guy in the second season? Is this the person that we see in the cold open of the second season or not?
I don't know. I'm still kind of unsure about that. I think so, but we open
in the next season in the 1920s, and we see a young version of Noah with another man that I think he kills. He stabs him with an axe to start off the second season. So
yeah. And also, yeah, Noah says we prefer a lie to the truth. Mm. So,
That's how he starts off. Because that's when he talks about what we tell ourselves to cover the pain is the lie.
Yep. Yep. So I definitely thought that was he said nothing in vain, not a single breath, not a single step. Nothing's in vain. Yeah. And then an eternal miracle of the one.
Mm.
And one was capitalized.
Oh, it was. Oh, interesting. So who is the one? I mean, maybe the one is God, but maybe there is a one.
That's kind of a reference to like Matrix type stuff also, which is allegory to the Bible.
To Jesus, so, yeah. And while they're talking, we flash to other characters. We see Ulrich, we see HG, we see Katarina and Martha sitting on a couch. We see Claudia looking at HG's book as well.
Yep.
And then Helge asks, who's next? Who's next? And he says, Jonas. And right when they say that, we see Jonas exiting the cave back in the 80s once again.
Yeah, and just one more thing. Noah mentions how he didn't understand any of this at a time, and it was only years later. None of the horrible things that befall us should be in vain, he says. So he keeps mentioning how things shouldn't be in vain, that they need to make sure, you know, they need to make as what are given our strengths, your pain made you who you are,
yep.
things like that. So just basically justifying all the horrible things that have happened to Helge so that he'll say who's next, so he gets them back to helping him. That's all that Noah's goal is with this. So most likely him saying how they prefer lies. He's lying throughout this entire thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting because we never really get a sense of what side of the coin Noah's on, and maybe we will in season three. Even in season two, we get a lot more Noah, but Noah just ends up getting murdered by Claudia. He gets shot by Claudia. But, you know, Noah, and we get a lot of that in the conversation that he has with Bartosz as well, that, you know, Noah claims that they're on the light side. And Noah claims that Claudia and the other people are on the shadow side. So we'll get into that when we get to the conversation with Bartosz. But Noah clearly thinks that he's on the right side, or at least that's the lie he tells himself. That's the story.
Everybody thinks they're on the – no one thinks they're evil. It's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
I think there's something even mentioned earlier in the season, how good and evil is a matter of perspective.
Yeah. Who was it that said that? Is it Peter who says that maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know it's mentioned a few times thematically. It's touched on.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about good and evil in this show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then we go back to the hospital. Mikkel is getting ready to get adopted. He's wearing a green jacket, and Ina says that she's going to adopt him instead of him going to a home. Then as Jonas is walking out of the cave, he walks by Charlotte, and she, a young Charlotte, a child Charlotte, she is drawing the dead birds. She's measuring the dead birds. Jonas asks her what year it is, and she says that it's 1986, of course. And they talk in they're talking about what is he going to do? What is he? Where is he? He says that he's not from around there. And she says, why are you here? Mm-hmm. And he says he's here to bring someone back from the dead, which immediately made me think of Mikkel in the skeleton Halloween costume that he was in earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like a dead man walking, which I think is what you pointed out.
Yeah.
Again, Jonas just doesn't seem to get it. Like, if he's going to stop, his idea is to bring Mikkel back, then he's not going to exist to ever bring Mikkel back in the first place.
Yeah. And then Charlotte asks about the dead birds and bringing them back.
Yep.
Jonas says, you have to go and find them younger. Jonas says, it won't change that they're dead. Charlotte says, he's crazy. Jonas says, maybe.
Yeah, he's not sure. So then we go from that to Charlotte in the 2019 time period. She is looking at microfilm of old newspapers, and she sees the Ulrich picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the music in this scene worked really, really well because it's that kind of breathy music. It sounds like somebody breathing. We've heard it a couple times in this season for sure. But that one, it really drives home the, like, just how earth-shattering that would be to be looking at a newspaper from 1953 and see your missing partner in that paper.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, for me, it was just one of those things where I really could identify with Charlotte and be like, yeah, that feeling, like, it really would be jaw-dropping. So, and we go from Charlotte looking at the newspaper clippings to then Ulrich in the 50s. He's in his cell and they're again asking where Helge is, and then the cops just start beating him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of like my lasting memories from this season, when it's always like, oh yeah, then Ulrich is just like stuck in the 50s and getting beaten by cops.
Yeah, getting beaten by his grandfather.
Well, his Cronwald's not his grandfather.
What would he be? Is he nothing? His wife's grandfather, I guess?
Conwald is Innes's father.
Okay.
So his son's adopted grandfather, basically, gotcha. Is who's beating him.
Yep.
Maybe, I mean, who knows? There definitely could be some connection. It wouldn't surprise me. But right now, he's of no relation to Ulrich.
Okay.
So then we see Jonas at the hospital, and he opens up Mikkel's door and sees Noah in there talking to Mikkel. So again, we saw Noah in there talking to Mikkel earlier. And I think Mikkel might actually be asleep at this point. And before Jonas can do anything, Helge grabs Jonas from behind. He wakes up in the bright blue bunker, and he has been locked away in that bunker where the blue wallpaper with the chair. So, and this is when we finally get our Stranger and Jonas reveal. Stranger comes to the door. Jonas is trying to get him to let him out, and he will not. The Stranger starts explaining things to Jonas, including that the chair is a prototype of a time machine, and it feeds off the energy. It feeds off the energy from the caves under the bunker, so that cave goes right under the bunker. And the Stranger says, it is no DeLorean, there is no steam power, it is just the first prototype of the time machine is this chair. They're talking about the letter, and Stranger is still explaining to Jonas about the letter. The Stranger explains, everything that you are experiencing, I have experienced. We think we're free, but we are on the same path. It seems like the Stranger should be talking to himself about this, because he does not realize he is on the same path as the Stranger that he met 33 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Stranger refuses to let him out, and he asks him, why did you kiss Martha? Now, I'm curious if that relates or refers to him kissing Martha in the rain a few episodes ago, or him kissing Martha when we see him kiss her on the beach in the episode where he goes back to the day before Michael kills himself.
I guess I think really that, know. Yeah, I think it could, yeah. I think it's referring to that if I had to choose.
So he asks him, why did you kiss Martha? But the kid he's talking to has not kissed Martha yet. That won't happen later.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he says, we can't stop what's inside of us, which points to what you were saying about how love is the driving factor in all of this. They mentioned how Mikkel is a small part of this sprawling sickness. So we've heard, Winden referred to as a sickness before. We're now hearing people referred to as sickness. Of what?
A festering wound.
A festering wound, yes. And the Stranger, the Stranger tells him, I am you. I am Jonas Cronwald. And before the Stranger can leave, he says, I have seen things no one should see, which I thought was a very interesting phrase. So Jonas stays locked in the bunker because it's what always happened. It's what happened to the Stranger. And the Stranger, though, 33 years later, he's learned nothing. He can't change anything. He thinks he can. He thinks by taking that machine, by telling Jonas who he is and then going into the caves, that he can do something to change it. Of course, he is just going to cause it, as we see. Anything that you wanted to touch on that scene?
No, I think you covered it pretty
That's
well.
That's like a huge loaded drop, obviously. So, throughout the season, we're watching the Stranger. I think if you're watching the first time, you wouldn't realize the Stranger is Jonas. But after, it's great because they do look enough alike that it would make sense. You're like, okay, I can see why they cast him.
Mm-hmm.
So, then we get another really great jaw-dropping scene. This show, I did note too that, a lot of shows, the penultimate episode is the one where the big stuff happens. This one, they save all the big stuff for the finale. In both season one and season two, the finale is loaded with so much good stuff happening. So many timelines closing and loops closing and things like that.
Yeah.
So we get Helge. He is driving, the 80s version of Helge is driving, and he's listening to a song that they subtitle the song. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to write all of it down, but there is a line about driving on fiery wheels into the future of the night. And right at that point, he drives.
We've heard this song before.
Oh, really? Do you remember when we heard this song?
It's in the bunker right before Eric is sent through the chair.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, so
I did not realize we had heard this song before.
Yeah, because I wrote down all the lyrics in one of my notes early on and read them off. It's the same song.
Great. Oh, wow. That's a good connection.
And that song, as he's listening to it, you can look at Helge, he's listening to it and he's like, oh man, it's like justifying what I need to be doing right now. It's like set it, it's motivating him to like stay on course.
Mm.
So
yeah, and just, he does again, stay on course.
Yep.
So he drives through the intersection. I know you've talked about that intersection before. Mm-hmm. And right then he gets T-boned by Helge from the 2019 timeline.
Yep.
And crashes right into his car. This was the accident that Peter referenced earlier in the season when he said that there was an accident on November 12th with his father involved. Mm-hmm. Of course, this was before Peter came to Winden. And, but of course, this accident does not kill 80s Helge, which was the intention. The intention of old man Helge was to kill 80s Helge. Although you would think he would remember that when this happened to him in the 80s, the old man is the one who died. So he tries to crash his car and kill 80s Helge. It does not work. He kills old Helge, is killed.
I think that's kind of where the dementia may play a factor in protecting him from revealing it to himself.
Yeah, okay, that would make sense because I was like, wouldn't he remember this? But yeah, he.
That's what ensures that part happens.
Yeah.
Just like with the gun jamming at a certain point, this is the gun jamming at his brain.
Mm.
He had dementia, and he got to dementia at a certain point that protected him from remembering and preventing himself from going back and doing it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And it's like if you knew it was done, you wouldn't walk through a tunnel and do it. You just like
sometimes characters still do it, even though they know it's what always happens.
And that's how it plays for them.
Mm-hmm.
The point is it can't change.
Yep. So
I notice old Helge is driving a black car while middle aged Helge is driving a red car.
Oh yes, a red Volkswagen SUV.
And Black seems to signify ending and death a lot in this show, in darkness.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have the black hole as well.
Jonas wearing black when he's talking about ending things to Ianis earlier in the episode.
So if we go on to that rainbow theory that we had earlier, if you combine every color of the rainbow, you get black. So if each bright color that we see is a part of the overall darkness that forms black.
Yeah, and then like even HG when he's in black earlier in the season is the only time he's talking truly negative about how time can be used. So characters seem to be darker when they're in black regardless.
Interesting. Well, that ties in with a lot of themes in this show. So, all right. So, yeah, so old Helge is dead and 80s version of Helge is just kind of disoriented from everything. Then we go to Helge's son, Peter. This is back in the 2019 timeline. He texts Charlotte to come to the cabin. She is looking at a picture of like all the pictures on the wall of all the different connections, hanging up the picture of the accident, as well as hanging up a picture of Ulrich in the 50s. And then we see a picture, a sketch drawing of Noah. And under it, it says, "Who is Noah?" And I wrote in parentheses, "When is Noah?" Mm-hmm. See, where is Mikkel? When is Mikkel? I think you could ask the same thing about Noah. We don't know who he is, but we also don't know when he is because he's all over the place. And right after we see that, we see this great scene between Noah and Bartosz in the car. So Noah is saying that everything is about to begin and that Jonas is actually the trigger of the black hole. He thinks he is ending it. He's actually causing it and creating it. That Claudia has been lying to Jonas. He's not the savior. He is the pawn. And Noah lays out that there are actually two groups fighting for control of time travel. One is light. And usually the opposite of light would be dark. He does not say one is dark. He says one is shadows. They are dark in nature, but the shadows are inhuman. They belong to the shadows. Claudia is inhuman. Do not believe anything she says. Noah says that Jonas is a puppet. And he gives Bartosz that book. And we're seeing that book get passed around and mentions millions of interlocking wheels and that no victory is ever achieved without sacrifice. This Noah and Bartosz conversation is a lot, reminded me a lot of the Noah and Helge conversation from earlier in the episode.
Yeah, it's pretty much just Noah trying to make sure everybody keeps doing what they've always done.
Yep. And he says, we must make sure everything happens as it always has. And we must be patient to be victorious. To free humanity, and I thought this was an interesting line, to free humanity from its immaturity and pain. So
yep.
immaturity could be a way that you could describe characters in this show, because Mikkel is the immature version of Michael, Jonas is the immature version of the stranger, who is Bartosz the immature version of, who is Noah the mature version of. Mm-hmm. I do think this intentionally so is trying to make you think that Bartosz and Noah are the same person.
Definitely.
I remember that was my, like, I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely the way it is. That's my theory coming out of this, because it's so shortly after we find out the stranger and Jonas are the same person, and we don't know anything about Noah's backstory, and we don't really know much about Bartosz, but we do know that they're working together, so it would make sense that they're the same person.
Yeah, definitely.
Noah ends it by saying it's time. Of course, we know that Noah is not I mean, I still watch this, and I'm like, oh, maybe Noah is Bartosz, and then I remember that we actually see young Noah at the beginning of the next episode, so we would not know that, we would know that Bartosz and Noah are not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. And then he says it's time. And as he says that, we see the stranger into the caves. He opens the machine in the caves and the towers start to rise. The towers on the machine. I was hoping that the towers were all going to be like aligned with the black checkers in the same spot, but they weren't. They're still off.
It seemed like the first one and the second one completely mirrored each other. Now
they were really close, but I was paying attention to that. They weren't exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then he sees a bloody Michael, which is who Jonas sees in his nightmares.
Is that blood on him? Is that what that is?
Or something oil? I mean, it's the same. It's Michael with like something dark all over his face.
So, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, because it's not like Michael dies by some bloody. Mm-hmm. Bloody suicide, but we do see that a couple times, so maybe there's like a alternate universe version of Michael that we'll see that has that blood, because we've
and he's a painter, kind of looks like the paint he uses to paint his pictures.
Yeah. Or
but I still don't know what that means.
Yeah, because we see that quite a bit. It reminds me of like
it comes out of Jonas's ear too.
Oh, you're right,
earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm. I think we see a couple other people who have nightmares of bloody characters. I mean, he does see bloody Mikkel in his dream at the beginning of this episode as well.
Yep.
So then we start flashing to people at all three of our different timelines as this machine is opening in the cave. We see Innes taking Mikkel back to her home, which is going to be the home that Jonas and Hannah live in 2019.
Is that what she's doing? It looked like I thought Mikkel was going to his old home and looking at it, and then Innes was taking him away from it. Like
I think she was taking... I'm pretty sure that she lives in that house with him. Okay. And then that house, and then Michael inherits that house when he's old enough and she moves out somewhere else. Cause that house I'm pretty sure is Jonas's house. The two houses look pretty similar.
Okay.
And then Charlotte arrives at the bunker and gives Peter a hug. We don't really see what comes from this. I guess it's just Peter admitting to what happened to her is what we're supposed to infer from that, but I guess we'll find out in the next season. Mm-hmm. Then I think this is something that really triggers the time loop, is Katarina is calling Ulrich's phone, and right when that happens is when the big black hole starts to open. So the phone that she's calling is of course the phone that the stranger is using to activate the machine in the caves. Mm-hmm. So when she's calling, because he's in the cave, he's in multiple timelines at once, I think it's connecting to that phone, and somehow it's making some kind of connection, which is causing this big black hole to happen. And then the lights flicker in all three of the timelines, and we see Magnus and Francisca sitting on the couch watching TV. They're watching a Raider ad, which I thought was interesting, Raider Bar ad, because I thought Raider Bars were only in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. They stopped production in 1991.
Yeah. And the ad for Raider Bars actually is not letterboxed, but it has the bars on the side. Like it's a full screen square image instead of a HD image that you would normally see. So mm-hmm. I don't really know. Maybe they're just watching like a something that is replayed from the 80s. I don't know. Or maybe because Magnus is trying to change the TV, maybe they were watching something, and when the time portals open, what they're watching turns to what was airing in the 80s at the time.
Could be.
Because yeah, Magnus is trying to change the remote.
And they look confused when they see it.
Exactly.
But maybe they're just confused by the power going out.
I think initially I thought it was just the power going out. We start seeing like a black, basically looks like a black umbrella over the town. That Regina, I think it's Regina and Alexander see that. We also see the hole opening over the machine, and it's under the bunker, and we kind of pan up from the caves. Stranger is right below Jonas in the bunker, so he's right below the bunker. And in the bunker, we see the black hole open between 1986 and 1953, and Jonas sees young Helge, child Helge, who's still locked in that bunker, all bloody. Of course, Ulrich put him in there and locked him in there, so he's stuck. He's been stuck there for at least a day now. Child Helge starts counting to three. Of course, he had to count to three. And when they see each other, they touch hands, and it sends young Helge from the 50s to the 80s into that blue bunker. And he wakes up, Helge wakes up in the blue bunker in the 80s, much like he did in his nightmare a couple episodes ago. So it's that same shot that we saw opening. Mm-hmm. It was probably like four or five episodes ago now.
Yep.
And Jonas awakens in the 2052 timeline. So Jonas awakens, I guess it's still the bunker. It's unclear where he awakens, if it's the bunker or maybe they dug the bunker out, but he awakens in some sort of bunker with a big character chart on the wall and weapons, guns, things like that. Now, before we talk about him actually leaving that bunker, what do you think? Do you think that was the bunker or do you think that's something else? I mean, he has to awaken at the same spot, right?
I think that's just the state of the bunker in 2052.
Okay. Because there is like a window and stuff out of it. So maybe they've just dug out the bunker or maybe the explosion opened the bunker.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's just the state of that area at this point.
I agree. I think that makes sense. And do you think that there's any reason why Helge gets sent from the 50s to the 80s, Jonas gets sent from the 80s to 2052? Do you think there's any reason for it? Because it's kind of weird that you would think Jonas would get sent to 2019, not to 2052. Or they'd swap and Jonas would get sent to the...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I really don't know.
My only thought is that black hole moves you to 33 years beyond your initial, like your natural timeline. But I don't know. Maybe there's no reason for it. Maybe it's just the way that the timeline has to work in order for things to play out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I really don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think we've had that revealed yet.
Yeah. I also noticed that in both the season one and season two finale, we have a black hole open and characters look at each other and make contact and it causes a big event to happen. So in the next one, Elizabeth and Charlotte touching is what's going to cause the quote unquote apocalypse. And this one, Helge and Jonas touching causes them to shift timelines, and I don't know what else happens outside of that, but we'll find out.
Yeah, basically is saying that when they start the hole, it ends the hole.
Yeah. So
the end is the beginning. And also, I did look up what Sic Mundus Est Creatus did mean, and so it does mean, thus the world was created.
Thus the world was created. Well, that makes sense. Thus the world was created. Thus the hole was created.
Mm-hmm.
We see in 2052, and I can't remember with Helge. I know he's in the 80s. He somehow has to get sent back to the 50s. It happens in season two. I just don't really remember what happens with him. But somehow he has to be back in the 50s at some point because he has to grow into being the version of himself that he is in the 80s.
Right.
You know, that's one of those things that I think was just hard for me to track the last time I watched it. So maybe that explains why Bernd and Greta are no longer together in the 80s timeline. Maybe we'll get some of that revealed. So then finally, the last part of the episode, the last part of season one, we see Jonas awakening in the bunker in 1952. We mentioned already kind of what he sees. He walks outside. It's snowing, or maybe that's ashes or fallout.
It looks like snow, but it's ashes, radioactive fallout.
Okay. And we did see earlier in the episode, we saw Claudia with a gun and she's puts her hand out and there's that same like snowy ash thing going on during one of the scenes where they show a bunch of characters. So Jonas is walking around. He sees restricted zone. You can see in the distance, the power plant is like half blown up. There are cars burnt out and a big truckload of people comes. And they all have masks covering their face, which obviously plays a little bit differently now. One of the people who I refer to her as like Anna Lucia from Lost. That's who she reminds me of. She has a big scar across her face. She takes her mask off to reveal a scar across her face. I don't think we know who that person is yet.
She looks like Martha.
Oh, maybe a little bit. I didn't think that was Martha, but I guess that could be. We do see her. She's kind of like the number two to Elizabeth in the next season, but I don't think we ever really get any more context about her. We see like a big plane flying overhead. So it's like, obviously it's, you know, we're in the future. I don't think it's ever said it's 1952, but we know now that it's, and if you do the math, 33 years that it's 1952. And she's the Scarface lady says, "Welcome to the future," and hits Jonas with the butt of the gun, and the season ends.
Yep.
I did note with this scene, no Elizabeth in this scene. Mm-hmm. Who we know is going to be like the leader of the people in the future. We did see Elizabeth's picture on the wall of the character chart when Jonas gets to 1952. We see child Elizabeth.
She just wasn't casted yet.
Right. So she's in the fox hat and the child picture. Of course, there's the fox wallpaper in the 1980s bunker.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. No, they just hadn't cast the Elizabeth character yet. So.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of times where the hold up and the reveal of the picture is.
Because they don't have the actress.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And I think that, overall, I did notice that when it ends, it doesn't end with like that high intensity drum. It just kind of ends like very muted. So no ticking or anything.
Nope. I wondered about with the Elizabeth thing. It might just be what you said. I was wondering if maybe they wrote the Elizabeth twist in season two. I like to think that they have everything sketched out already, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But
just because we got so little of, like, I was expecting that it was like, oh, Elizabeth did a lot in the background in season one that like I just didn't pick up on, knowing what her significance is going to be. But really, like, we see none of her in season one, unless there's stuff that we saw that we don't know and we'll know at the end of season three, like ways that she had an impact in season one. But that will be for us to find out in a few weeks.
Yep.
So, Jonas is in the future. Everything is all messed up in the timeline, or everything is right the way it should be. And we are at the end of season one, which means we get to start on our 8-episode season two watch next.
Mm-hmm.
So, how did season one overall hold up for you? That's like your 15th time watching it.
Yeah. It never gets old. Ironically, never gets old.
It's amazing because you pick up new stuff every time you watch it. I mean, as many times as you've watched it, there's still things that you're picking up. And I don't think it's just that you're forgetting things. I think it's that, like, there are just so many details in this show.
Yeah, definitely. See, it's such a good season, though. It's just a great season of television.
Do you remember watching Captain Planet much when you were younger?
Vaguely. I don't remember much about it.
So there's an episode where Wheeler time travels. Wheeler's the redheaded fire guy. And he time travels and wakes up in the future. And that reminds me so much of this last scene with Jonas waking up in the future. It always, every time I watch this scene, it always reminds me of Wheeler waking up.
So. Yeah, I don't remember that.
No,
I don't know any of their names. So
it's like the whole thing is like that they do something and then they wake up in like a planet that's like underwater because the polar ice caps have melted and all of this terrible stuff has happened. He probably woke up in 2020, to be honest.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, so. All right, so that wraps up our recaps of season one. Of course, we're going to have recaps of season two starting probably
MVPs.
Oh, right, thank you. I knew we were forgetting something. So our MVPs for the episode we've been tracking, we're going to keep tracking. I already figured out who my MVP was watching the episode. Who is your MVP?
I'll give it to Jonas/the Stranger.
Oh man, that means Jonas is going to be the champion of season one no matter what. Jonas has 4 MVP points on the season. So 4 out of 10 episodes, he got an MVP from one of us.
Yeah.
Mine is somebody who has not yet gotten an MVP. He's going to play a bigger role in season two, and that is going to be Noah. I think Noah keeps things going in the timeline the way they're supposed to be. He also delivers some really interesting monologues and exposition that helps clue you in on what's going on. Why did you give Jonas your MVP?
He's who started and ends it.
So are you giving it to the Stranger? I mean, I know they're the same. Are you giving it to
one? I said Jonas/the Stranger, but
so like to both of them basically.
Yeah, I mean, you give it to one, you're giving it to them both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so season two, you know, I remember bits and pieces of it. I'm sure a lot of it will come back to me. I remember it opens with that really good 1920s cold open.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna get some backstory on Jonas. Of course, we're going to get backstory on Jonas. We're going to get backstory on Noah in that. We're going to get the Elizabeth Charlotte reveal. What are some other things you're looking forward to in season two?
There's some things with Adam, the lake. I'm looking forward to watching the lake. I think that's
What's the lake? Is that
there's just a scene that takes place at a lake, and there's some incidents at the lake with Jonas and Martha on the beach.
Yep. That's the one I was thinking you were mentioning. Yep. That's a good scene. That whole episode, the episode the day before Michael kills himself, is a really good episode.
Yep.
And we're gonna get Ulrich. So we're jumping forward. You know, obviously we're jumping forward in time lots, but between season one and season two, we do jump forward 6 months. So we're gonna be right around, I think, June 20th. So 2020. So just, you know, from when we're recording this, just a week from when we're recording this, really, is what time we're gonna get started getting synced up pretty close to the date we're recording to the date the episode takes place on.
Yeah.
You think that's gonna cause a black hole, like when we record on, you know, June 23rd and it's June 23rd on the episode?
I hope so.
Yeah. I don't know if we're ever gonna quite get aligned because we only have 8 episodes and we have a little over 2 weeks to go through 8 episodes. So but it'll be fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you guys all for joining us for this finale discussion and all of our season one discussion. If you missed anything we talked about in season one, definitely go back and listen to those. We'll be coming back in the next couple of days with season two, episode one. Do you remember what the episode is titled for the?
I don't know. I didn't
See. Let's look it up. It is called Beginnings and Endings. That's fitting. Beginnings and Endings is the name of the season two premiere. And like I said, we're going to be jumping forward 6 months on the show. And if you want to make sure you stay up to date with everything we're doing on Digesting Dark, you can subscribe on any of the podcasting platforms. You also can subscribe on YouTube. You can do both. Feel free to give us a subscription, a thumbs up, any of that stuff. That all helps with getting our YouTube more coverage as well as our podcasts. Just trying to get as many people up to date on Dark before season three comes out in 2 weeks. And if you have any feedback, definitely tweet at us. I am at Brooks ZA.
And I'm at Aaron JY Brooks.
Yep. And we'll be back with Beginnings and Endings, the season two premiere, to talk about that as we race forward to the start of Dark, the final season, season three. Thank you for joining us, Sigmundus, and we will see you soon.
See ya. Oh,